Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Solo pod today, looking ahead to week 18, and we have a Final Four in college football, and that is where we will start. What a win by Ole Miss. What a terrible loss for Georgia, as our Final Four is now set. It is Ole Miss and Miami in one semifinal, with Miami laying 3.5, and it is Indiana and Oregon, with Indiana laying 3.5, and a rematch from a regular season game where Indiana went to Oregon, won the game, despite throwing a pick six pretty comfortably, and we get a rematch of that. And then just, it's almost like one of these brackets in the NCAA tournament happens sometimes where you get like an 11 versus a 6 or something, or that wouldn't work with the seedings, but you get two double-digit seeds where one bracket, all hell breaks loose, and nobody could ever, seeing it coming. And this is what the Ole Miss Miami situation is like. And both these teams were pretty close. I think if Ole Miss had lost their last game to Mississippi State with all their coaching turmoil, they're probably out. Miami was a long shot the day of, minutes before the selection, to make it. And not to pick on the Cinderellas, the mid-majors, FCS, but this is why letting the Tulanes, the James Madisons, it's just not a good idea. Miami was almost out. Miami very well may be holding up the trophy here in a couple weeks. And you almost left that team out. You left a really good Notre Dame team out. But the story of the day, before we get to the NFL, it's such a bad loss for Georgia. I mean, to think they're up 9, it seems like they're about to run away with the game. They get the fumble return, the disaster of a 2-minute drill before the half for Ole Miss, and then Georgia's getting the ball with a 9-point lead to start the half. All right, they go 3-and-out, they punt. But then they get the stop at midfield, and it looks like they're going to, with the way they were moving the ball, the way that drive was going, looks like they're going to punch it in, probably go up 16. All right, settle for a field goal. No big deal. It'll be 12. The kid misses, and Ole Miss really kind of dominated the game from there, although they did have a fourth down they needed to convert, and that really swung the game. And it's hard to believe Chambliss, man. That kid wouldn't have seen the field if Simmons, the starter, didn't get hurt the first few weeks of the season. And you never know what's sitting on the bench with these college teams. You think, oh, the starter's hurt, you got to downgrade him. Well, Chambliss is a really good player. I don't know how he translates to the pros, but he is one hell of a player. He made some outstanding plays. And then with a 10-point lead, Georgia almost comes back and steals it. And what they did at the end, when you're down 3, you can kick the field goal or you can leave them time if you get the touchdown. You can't do both. You can't kick the field goal, tie it, and leave them almost a minute. That's an eternity in college. That was clearly a last team with the ball kind of game. It's tough to say you would go for it, because that's just putting your whole season on one play, but I don't think anybody watching that game thought, all right, Georgia will kick the field goal, they'll get a stop, and then they'll win the game in overtime. It felt like Ole Miss was going to go down the field. It wasn't easy. It took them to, I think, third down was when they made the big play, but just a horrendous loss for Georgia, who doesn't have a lot of these. They had the one in 2017, when they almost won the title. They hadn't won one yet under Kirby Smart, and Tua came in for Hurts. They rallied back, Bama did, and Georgia lost a horrible game. Since then, when they get in, they've won a couple championships. They usually take care of business. They usually don't have these kind of awful, awful losses in the playoffs. This is a terrible loss to be up 9 with the ball, second half, looked like the much better team. And, the Bear, Chris Felica, brought this point up. I was kind of thinking the same thing. Give credit to Kev O'Neill, who liked Ole Miss plus the points. It just felt like there were very few people who liked Ole Miss. Sometimes that doesn't play out. Sometimes everybody's right. Sometimes everyone's on Georgia, and that's how it plays out. Georgia wins the game comfortably. They could have easily a play here or there pulled away, but it seems a little too good to be true. Plus the line came down. That line closed 6.5, 6. That, it's not like that went up to 7 with all the people seemingly on Georgia. Ole Miss, that line stayed within a touchdown, under a touchdown, and even they got somebody was betting them. Somebody was betting them, because it closed 6 a lot of spots. So a great win for Ole Miss. It's a great story now with no Kiffin. What is he thinking tonight? I mean, I'm sure there's part of him that's, proud of the kids. I built this program. But this is a guy who hasn't been in the playoff his whole career. It's not like he's won 3 or 4 national championships. He leaves a team that's 2 wins away from winning the whole thing to go build something else at LSU. I know they're giving him a ton of money, all that, but he's got to feel conflicted at the very least, Kiffin, after watching that game, thinking, man, the bracket opening up, which is another reason, just an awful loss for Georgia. Ohio State's out of the mix. Not that Miami's a rollover, but you start to look around, and all right, a team you thought was a favorite or one of the favorites, they were the short shot, is out of the way, and you're not able to capitalize. Now, either Ole Miss or Miami will be playing for the championship. The two games in between, the afternoon games on Thursday, were just Oregon, Texas Tech was tough to watch. Texas Tech had no offense. It's hard to sit there and watch that game and think that team went 12-1 against the spread and just dominated everybody. It just goes to show you. I'm sure some of it's the layoff, but it goes to show you the level of competition too. Where, I mean, you played BYU. Who else did you play? It's really a reflection, I think, of the competition when you're that embarrassed. And plus, Oregon mentioned it on the Wednesday show previewing these games. They had been there. They had done that. They took their lumps last year. They had that experience. They're battle-tested. They play Indiana. They play some of these tough teams. You know, they played Ohio State twice last year, the best team. So I think that helped them. And they're just the better team. They look faster. That was it was not easy. It was ugly for a while. And watching these games, Mendoza's impressive. Moore's okay. I don't know. I guess you take Mendoza first overall if you got the first pick and need a quarterback. And you just, hey, there's nobody's perfect. There's no such thing as a can't miss. But I didn't watch Mendoza all year thinking, wow, that guy's a lock NFL star. But he was impressive today. That game was over very quickly. And I think Bama and DeBoer's decision to go for it in their own territory early when it was a 3-0 game first half, that opened the floodgates. But I think DeBoer, looking back, probably knew what we were about to find out, and that is, I need to try something. When you're the big underdog, you need to try something. You need to muck up the variance. You can't just play it straight. You got to steal a possession. And it was a weird play they ran, and look, anytime the play doesn't work, the play is going to get second-guessed. But Indiana was going to win that game and win it comfortably no matter what. And I made the point also on Wednesday that there's still a faction of college football fans, a large size, I think, and it's probably decreasing, I would think it is, that say, well, I know they're good, but it's still Indiana. But there's no buts. I know they don't have the five-star talent up and down the roster, but they are really good. They're balanced. They're good on both sides of the ball. They're well-coached. Cignetti did a terrible job last year in the playoff against Notre Dame, you know, punting, basically surrendering on the game. But he is a hell of a coach, and his team is now two wins away from a title. And the game on Wednesday night was looking like it was going to be the best game, the Miami and Ohio State game. I liked Miami. I really liked Miami. I got nervous when they got the ball. What, second possession? They got in the red zone and they fumbled. I said, ugh. They got a quick three and out. They got a sack. It was looking like Miami was everything you'd hope for as someone who bet them, you know, money line and thought they could make a run in this tournament here. But you can't do that when you're a big underdog. You can't give away possessions. But the defense was outstanding. They get the first touchdown, which, again, as a big underdog, you want to score from. You always want to score first, but it's so important to just not be playing from behind. You can dictate your pace. You can relax a little. And then they got what I thought they needed to do, is that was create some offense with their defense, create turnovers, and they didn't just create the turnover. They ran it all the way back. That kid did an incredible job reading the screen, catching it full speed too. I don't remember too many plays like that where a guy just reads the screen that beautifully, catches it in stride, and runs into the end zone. And this is why it was such a great game. Anytime, it was mostly a two-score game for the majority of the game, but anytime the favorite, especially the defending national champ, the short shot to win it all, anytime the favorite's down two scores, it adds a little drama. And I actually thought a couple plays here and there, I actually thought Miami was on the verge of blowing them out. They had the ball up 14-0. I thought that was a terrible reversal when Beck got the first down, and they went to review and said, nope, he was short. I didn't see that at all. Miami punted. Miami also had another possession where they had first and 10 from the plus 30 up 14-0, where, hey, you go up 21-0, even 17-0, but 21-0, you can forget it. With your defense that late in the half, it's just about over. And I thought for a moment they were going to regret that when it gets to 17-14, and not just when it gets to 17-14, but Ohio State gets the ball back at 17-14. It felt like, even though Miami was up three, it felt like they were losing. But they got a break with the holding call, which there was a lot more holdings that weren't called that night, but I don't want to sit here and get into the refs. The refs barely threw any flags, which was strange. It was weird to sit there and just watch a game with no flags whatsoever. That pushed Ohio State back. They got a pass rush when they needed to. Bain is going to be just a tremendous NFL player. They've got some monsters defensively. And then I thought one of the big plays, and Beck was really good in the game. I know Beck, the stats aren't pretty, and I'm not sure what kind of player he'll be at the next level. He's very up and down, but every third and three, third and four, he put the ball where they needed to. They made plays. Tony's tremendous, and Miami marches on. I thought an underrated play of that game too was Miami gets the ball back down three with like a little under 6 minutes to go. And the original punt has Miami at their own 10. But I think there was a formation penalty on Ohio State. They had to repunt it. And Miami starts with the 30. And that gives them a little breathing room. Now, maybe Miami, with their offensive line, with their physical dominance, they would have just ran out the clock anyway because they were moving the ball with ease that last drive. But it's different psychologically handling the ball, operating on your own 10 where, oh man, a sack, a penalty, a turnover. We're right on our own goal line. You're a little tighter where if you're on the 30, all right, you got a little breathing room. You got some room to operate. And they made every play they needed to play. I don't know what the hell Ryan Day was doing with the clock where he has a timeout. He's letting the clock run. He lets all the time come off the clock. And then on second down, he lets them score where I know you weren't going to win the game no matter what, but your best bet is just, first off, call the timeout as soon as possible. If you get the break of all time and they fumble, you want as much time as possible. If you get a holding, you want as much time as possible. Call the timeout. What are you saving it for? And boy, like I said, you're not going to win the game anyway, but the best scenario is you maybe strip them, just try to create a fumble. If not, all right, they probably kick a field goal with like 20 seconds left and it's a 6-point game. At least you're a couple plays away from getting in Hail Mary range. I don't know what the plan was to say, all right, we'll get the ball back with 55 seconds left, down 10, and now we'll go get two scores. I mean, that was just a very bizarre sequence. And it shows you, too, these college teams, these coaches, they don't play a lot of teams, especially a team as good as Ohio State. They don't play a lot of teams on the same level as them. So they're not good with these scenarios. When you're blowing out Minnesota and Purdue and you're not playing in these close games, that works in your disadvantage. It really does because these guys are just, they do some head-scratching things. And when you don't have the reps, I mean, I would think a coach at that level making that kind of money, won a national championship, you'd think he'd be a little smarter to handle that better. But again, when you don't have the experience week in, week out of playing close games, you come up with stuff like that. And that was really, really bizarre. Again, not why they were gonna win the game. It's not why they lost, but that's just indefensible. That goes to show you if you're screwing that up, what else are you getting wrong? Because that's pretty basic. That was just really, really bizarre. But give Miami credit. They took the punches. They had a chance to put the game away. They didn't. Ohio State fought back, and Miami almost had to win it a second time where they had to get the stops. They had to get the drive when they needed to. And that's just an incredible, incredible win for Miami. And think about Miami. They were 200-1 at Circa, at a lot of books. The week of conference championships, the week of the selection, figuring, all right, they're 5-6-1 to get in. If they get in, they're one of the last teams in. Road games in Ohio State in a tough bracket. Well, that 200-1 is down to like 3-1 plus 350 in some spots. And they are very live, like I said, a 3.5-point favorite against Ole Miss. And I thought against Georgia, I actually thought if Miami had to play Georgia, it's just tough to have two home run games again. You have that home run performance. That did feel like a championship level type of game against Ohio State. It's hard to back that up with, all right, I'm going to bring my absolute A-plus best punch, one game, win, bounce back, and do it again a week later against a team like Georgia. The fact that they get Ole Miss, I just think they're better than Ole Miss. I mean, Chambliss is obviously a player you have to respect, and Ole Miss is playing with house money at this point. So I don't love the idea of laying 3.5 points, but I do think Miami probably will get to a championship game here. I don't have a feel for the other game yet. I'll have to go back and look into the box score, just kind of think it over, just instant reaction here. Although, I remember watching the game Indiana versus Oregon. Indiana really did dominate the game, won by 10, and a game where they threw a pick six, they won by 10. But Oregon, like Chambliss and Ole Miss, that is an opponent you have to respect. So no plays right now on these games. I think it's a good Final Four. It was a fun bookend with Miami and Ohio State on Wednesday night, the two dead games, and then it looked like we were going to get three dead games. It looked like all those games were going to be on New Year's, and that would have been a bummer if we got three duds on New Year's, and we were not that far away from it. Georgia was one stop or one score. They were very close to making that a decisive victory. But Ole Miss makes the plays they need to, and it is now just a very unusual Final Four with Indiana, Oregon, Ole Miss, and Miami. So looking forward to it. It was a fun couple days. And these are weird. When you have the playoff games and then you go back to the bowl games on Friday, it's just very anticlimactic to go from watching a game you watched on Thursday night with Ole Miss and Georgia, and then you got Miami and Ohio State. And now you turn around Friday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it's Rice and Texas State, with Texas State a 16.5-point favorite, Navy 7.5 over Cincy, Mississippi State 3.5 over Wake, and Arizona over SMU. Just very, very strange. Very strange sequencing. I don't know why. I mean, there was always one kind of oddball bowl game, like January 3rd or 4th after the BCS games. I'm thinking back to when it was like a four-team playoff or even before that. But to have like four like this is a little weird. But hey, like I've been saying with all these football games, it's football. It's on TV. You can watch it. You can bet it. So not too much to complain about, even though these are games, unless you have money on them. I mean, nobody's watching these games unless you have money on these games, these bowl games. As far as the NFL, we head into Week 18. Hard to believe the season is over just like that. I can't remember a season, a Week 18 where, or a final week, because it used to be Week 17, where there was this much already decided. I've been talking about it for a couple weeks, but you basically have nothing on Sunday. You get the two games on Saturday, which are good. Carolina clinches the division with a win, but Tampa doesn't clinch the division with a win. So that, I mean, that's still a very dramatic game, but it's not as dramatic as win or in, because if Atlanta wins on Sunday against the Saints, it's all moot. So it's not a straight up division title game. It is for one team, Carolina. It's not for Tampa. And then the really good game, the game of the weekend, the battle for the NFC West, the battle for the one seed, Seahawks and 49ers, Seahawks laying a point and a half. I mean, those are two really good games. Saturday, 4:30 Eastern, Saturday, 8 o'clock Eastern. Then on Sunday, I mean, listen to these games. Saints and Falcons, Browns and Bengals, Cowboys, Giants, Vikings against a Packer team, nothing to play for, Texans, Colts, Titans, Jags, Chiefs, Raiders, Bears, Lions, Broncos laying 12.5 to the Chargers. I mean, these games, I mean, I know that's for the one seed, so it's not like all of these games are meaningless because there is some jockeying for seeding. It's just, I mean, do you really believe that the Chargers have a chance with all their backups to go into Mile High and beat Denver and knock them off from the one seed? I don't. It's just, it's a slate with a lot, without a lot of juice going in. Looks like Philly's going to rest their guys. They're laying 3.5 against Washington. And then the game at night, Jets-Bills minus 7. My goodness, this is similar to what I said about these bowl games. Unless you got a bet on these games, in it, I don't know how you could have a bet on some of them. I mean, who the hell is sitting there watching Bills-Jets for 3 hours, Sunday, 4:30 Eastern? My goodness, it's a rough slate. Then Sunday night, Steelers-Ravens, Ravens laying 3.5, total 41.5. The games I have picks on, I'll get to my picks here in a second. I'll get to them now. I like the Steelers plus the 3.5. I'm surprised you're getting the hook here. I know the Ravens are a little bit better than Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh at home on a primetime game, division on the line, that's a really good home field advantage. You probably got to give them, even though home field is worth 1.5 now, you probably got to give them like the full 2. We're saying Baltimore's 5 points, 5.5 points better than Pittsburgh on a neutral field in a series that's always close. The games are always low scoring. It's 10 of the last 12 have been one score games. 9 of the last 12 actually won by Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has played Baltimore tough, even in years where they're the undermanned team. It's kind of representative of the Steelers, where they win when you don't expect them to. They kind of let you down in games that you think they should win. They're just a hard team to get a grasp on. Well, I guess they're easy to get a grasp on in that way, where they're good as an underdog. They're not quite as good as a favorite. Tomlin has always been like that. But I think this is a typical, close, ugly, low-scoring 20-17, 19-18 game. I do think the Ravens win. I do think the Ravens win, but Lamar Jackson is going to play quarterback for Baltimore. But when is the last time Lamar Jackson looked like Lamar Jackson, looked like the MVP? I mean, it's week 2 or week 3. I mean, he's been limping around. He's clearly been hobbled by something. Is that something where the week off just cures everything and he's fine? If that's not the case, he doesn't play well when he's 65, 75%, whatever percent you want to put it on, because he needs that elite speed. He's not that pinpoint accurate passer. He needs the threat of, hey, he could just outrun anybody. That creates problems for the defense. That creates questions of, you got to account for Lamar, and that creates openings. And if you don't have those openings, if you don't respect that run, if you don't fear to death his running ability, which, who knows if that running ability is going to be there Sunday night. He's an okay player. He's just nothing special. So a 80%, 75%, whatever percent you want to say, version of Lamar, that's hard to lay 3.5 with them. I know Pittsburgh, they've been ugly offensively too, especially without Metcalf. They really had nobody to throw the ball last week, but I like taking the points. I like the under. And I do like Denver, even though I know they haven't blown anybody out all year, but they were in a similar game last year. They were at home. They needed to beat the Chiefs, who were going to the playoffs. The Broncos needed to win that to get in, and the Chiefs didn't get off the bus. I've said this, you know, I always say this time of year. Teams that are going to the playoffs that have nothing to play for usually do not play good spoilers. They have their mind on the next week, where teams that are out of it say, you know what, we're going home, but hey, let's play hard one last week. Let's try to ruin their season. Let's try to knock them out, and they get up for it. Teams that are already in the playoffs, they just say, you know what, let's not get hurt. Let's not play anybody. Let's just get ready for next week. So I think Denver, I know that's not a great offense to lay points with, but I think they'll create some turnovers. I think they'll win, you know, a 27-10 type of game. I do like the Broncos to roll and win that game comfortably. I mentioned I like Pittsburgh plus the points and the under. And how about Green Bay team total under? I know it's low. You can call it 13. There's some 12.5 plus money. There's some 13.5 where the juice is a little higher. Clayton Tune is starting at quarterback. He is awful. Absolutely awful third stringer. Minnesota is still playing hard. It's still playing well defensively. I think they're going to take some solace into the fact that, hey, we can finish over 500. So I could see a scenario where Green Bay gets shut out. I mean, it's Tune is that bad, and Minnesota doesn't seem to be taking the foot off the gas, even though, you know, it would benefit them to move down and, you know, get a better draft pick and get a fourth place schedule. But these teams just don't think like that. They condition themselves to winning. Football is not a sport where you can go and, you know, you think about a draft pick and go half speed. You got to play football full speed. And Minnesota has actually played really well to close the season. Just wasted a really, really good defense. And I think they will win the game. And I mean, I don't want to lay points with Minnesota because I don't know what their quarterback situation is going to be like, but I don't see Green Bay scoring. As far as the big game, San Fran and Seattle, I just can't get to Darnold on the road. I know this is not a defense that's going to pressure him. And the defenses that gave him trouble last year was really the Rams, even though, I mean, I guess the Lions are really bad defensively and they still give him a hard time. He's got to shake this rep on the road, a big game. I got to see him do it. Now, this is the defense to do it against because, like I said, they don't create turnovers. They don't create pressure. He's got some weapons, but he has not played well in a while here. And you just wonder if it's in his head a little bit. So for that reason, I would go with San Francisco. Don't feel great about it. I do feel great about it as a teaser. Like, you tease him up to 7.5, I would think that would be a close game. And it is remarkable that Darnold is in the same position as he was this time last year. On the road, chance to win the division, chance to win the one seed. But if he loses, he drops all the way down to the 5. Now, this year, if he drops to the 5, you get the NFC South. So it's a softer landing. Last year, that was a tough draw with the Rams where he dropped to the 5. This year, it's a little different. Where you go back to Carolina, you go to Tampa. It's not the end of the world, but you would still, obviously, you prefer the bye. You prefer just, hey, win one home game and you're one home game away from going to the Super Bowl. That with only the one bye, that one seed is so advantageous in this new format. And I do think if Shanahan in San Francisco win, I do think Shanahan will win coach of the year. He's down like plus 150, 160. Mentioned that the other day at plus 200. I do think it would be hard, especially on a standalone game. He's going to get the last word. That kind of thing where everybody's watching this game. I think that has an effect on the voters. And that'll be basically a 3.5-hour commercial for Shanahan, an advertisement with all the announcers saying, going through with the injuries. They'll have the graphic of all the players that miss games. Brock Purdy missed games, a million guys on defense. I think that lasting impact will get him over the top. While Vrabel and some of these other guys, they're going to be playing these obscure games on Sunday with, you know, divided audience. I do think that really, really matters with the voters. Not that I know for sure, but just watching these things develop over the years, I could see that being a factor. I would love to see Dart win Rookie of the Year. Maybe if he has one good game, it's such a wide open race that Shuck doesn't play well and they lose to Atlanta and McMillan doesn't do anything. Could Dart win it? I just feel like the 4-13 is going to be hard to overcome. But if you look at his stats and you consider Neighbors was out, Scadabo was out, I don't think it's crazy that he gets consideration. I feel like if he played one good game this week, he'll be in the mix but fall just a little bit short. So that was one where, man, talked about it on here when it was 22-1, 25-1. It got down to right around even money. Then he got hurt and they lost games. And you know, part of it's not his fault. They blew leads to Denver and Chicago. And a lot of this stuff was, hey, he got him a lead and just the defense couldn't hold on. And if he had three more wins, he's viewed differently. He's got a lot more, hey, he took him to 5-6 wins. You can build on it. It's just hard when they're in the mix for the number one pick to get that respect from the voter. So we'll see. At least the NFL, I mean, you don't find out right away the awards, but was it the week of the Super Bowl? So season ends, you got a few weeks. It's not like baseball where regular season ends, you go through a month of playoffs, then you go through another month or 2 or 3 weeks, and then you find out. It's a little quicker, at least with the NFL awards, for people that have those bets. But just quickly to recap the picks, Packers, team total under 13. Broncos, minus 12.5. Steelers, plus 3.5. Steelers, Ravens, under 41.5. Enjoy it. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to start to feel like that transition time where Saturday there's no college football. You get two NFL games, but there's no college football on Saturday this week. And this is the last Sunday where you got multiple NFL games on at the same time. It's all standalone games this point forward. So it's all right. When the new year gets here, you realize, you know, baseball's not too far away. You watch a little NFL playoffs, a little college basketball, and before you know it, spring training, warmer weather, brighter days ahead. So enjoy the weekend. Thank you guys for listening. Happy New Year. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Monday. See you then.